WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi.
And my name is Kathy Lenatra.
And we will be bringing you Monday Night Talk this evening as we have a excellent lineup, as always.
We do.
So we'll start things off with the State House report. State Rep Dave DeCose will call in, give us a little bit of an update. It's been a while since we've had Dave on.
It's been a while since I've seen Dave, actually.
Dave, I believe this evening we'll be meeting with the Board of Selectmen or the Select Board in Hanover. So it's kind of hard for him to be here and meet up with them at 7 o'clock. So.
Oh, yeah.
And then we will speak with John Brown. John Brown is a member of the Pembroke Select Board.
Yes.
And he'll be joined by Gordon Andrews. Now, when John was like, "Hey, I want to do this segment," and he goes, "I want to have a gentleman, a former Halifax selectman, Gordon Andrews, join." I go, "Okay."
Also on the school committee. I don't know if he still is, but he was a school committee member as well.
Okay. So the thought is there's a little to have a conversation in regards to the water situation. I believe both communities share the East and West Monpont ponds.
Yes.
And knowing that we didn't have a lot of snow this winter, and it was really, really dry last summer.
It was dry. It went hot last summer. Remember how hot it was last summer?
It was very hot. And knowing that they deal with issues with water, they want to have a little bit of a conversation and they want to discuss. So I said, sure. That's the idea of this radio program. Have discussions like this. Hour number two. We have Abington Selectman Alex Bazanson and Rick Collins. Now, Rick wears multiple hats. Rick right now serves on the Abington Planning Board, but he also has written for the Patriot Ledger. He was a communications guy for Bob Hedlund.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
But he resides in Abington, and there's a bit of an issue that there are concerns because there have been reoccurring incidents that have happened in the town of Abington when it comes to the commuter rail, whether it's unsafe crossings, whether it's the speed of the train going through the community.
I believe it crosses right over North Avenue.
That is correct.
Right.
That is correct. And so much so that there was actually a fatality last spring in 2022.
And it's such a busy street.
So the idea is there's a kind of a push. The town is putting a call out saying, can something be done? Now, we hear constant reports over the past 2 weeks about how they've really dropped the speed of the trains in Boston because they are, you know, trying to check and see if the tracks are okay. So they've gone from like 40 miles an hour to 20. And so the conversation tonight is just to kind of just put it out there that this community is concerned, and also, at least on my behalf, I want to know what have they heard from Keolis and what have they heard from the MBTA.
Yes, it'll be interesting to hear.
And then we're going to do a little dancing.
Well, we're not going to do a little dance.
No, no, no. We're not going to do any dances. But we're going to speak with people who... We're going to speak with Amy Naples.
Amy Naples.
As folks may or may not know, that there's a little dancing going to be happening this Friday.
This Friday evening.
At 6:30 p.m., the Indian Pond Country Club. I believe somebody in this room, and it's not me, is actually a judge for this competition.
I will be a judge. I will be a judge this year. I've hung up my dancing shoes and decided that I'm a professional now and I can judge others.
So you've retired them.
I've retired the dancing shoes.
Hmm.
Just in a professional capacity.
Okay. Hmm.
Still break out in a little dance jam now and then in the kitchen. But professionally, I'm done.
So how do you, what's your mindset as being a judge? So how do you go into this and I mean... Have you ever judged something before?
I have. I've judged many things before, Kevin. Not a dancing competition, but I have judged many things before, whether it's in my own head or professionally judged.
Bravo.
I am looking forward to it. I know all the contestants. I ran into them at Alden Park one night after one of their dance lessons and tried not to look any of them in the eye because I don't want to show favorites. But I will be a judge with Michelle Brady. From the Plymouth Center of Council Active Living.
Okay. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Center of Active Living, yeah.
Okay.
And Derek Brindisi, who is the town manager of Plymouth, and then the actual professional from Dancing with the Stars.
That's amazing.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it.
As am I. And now, if you're sitting at home saying, well, right about now is when they will check traffic. No, no. We have retired the traffic that we normally do the last traffic check of the evening. Sad but true. You had your last report just about 10 minutes ago. So if you can remember that one. But we continue on with the radio program. As right now we wait for Dave to give us a call. Dave should be joining us any moment. But to get, this gives you a couple of moments. You were unable to join us last week.
I was there in the end.
You were there in the end.
I was there in the end.
But you weren't able to join us for the beginning of the show.
No,
because you were out.
I was in Amherst. I was at UMass Amherst with my colleagues, Rep. Matt Muratori and Rep. Allison Sullivan. We all serve on the Joint Ways and Means Committee. And we had a hearing at UMass Amherst. It was a lovely ride there. And we made it back before it started snowing, which I was afraid of. And then again tomorrow, we have a Joint Ways and Means hearing in Fitchburg. And I am fortunate enough and honored to be the chair of that hearing.
Wow. So what we're going to do is we will get more details about your serving on the Ways and Means and what that has been like. But joining us is your colleague here on the South Shore, State Rep. Dave DeCoste. Rep. DeCoste, how are you, sir?
Good evening. How are you doing, Mr. Tachi? Rep. Lenatra, how's everything going?
Great, Dave. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours.
Dave, so I explained to the folks that you normally love being here in studio, but you were already kind of committed to doing something, heading to Hanover this evening to...
Nothing secret, but we're going to talk to the Hanover Select Board about probably the same thing that Rep. Lenatra has to do down in her and try to look in the crystal ball and talk about Chapter 70 funding and 90 funding and funding for roads and that type of stuff.
So we, you know... I know I've had the representative, she's kind of given her take on the governor's budget. We've had other legislators on. It's your turn. You've had a chance to see Governor Healey's budget. What is your thoughts on the $55 billion plus bill?
Well, I was pleasantly surprised. I was happy with many things. I'm happy that she is looking at raising the amount for the senior circuit breaker. I am happy that we're going to get some, I think, some targeted relief maybe for SPED funding and ELL funding. And I'm happy she's looking at that. I'm happy that she is raising the rates for the, potentially for the inheritance tax, for the death tax, whichever you want to call it, that maybe it'll take the sting out of inheritance taxes here and maybe allow many of our constituents who have been leaving because of that to to remain in Massachusetts. So there are a lot of good things. And again, the devil's in the details. But, you know, there's some positive things, and I think we're off to a good start.
I know you're a big proponent of the South Shore Votechs, the trade schools. What kind of hope is there that these schools will get some additional funding when it comes to their longevity? I know that there's been a conversation about the MSBA possibly helping them to refurbish their building, not only the newer part of the building, but the 50-year-old plus part of their building.
Well, they're looking at that now, and that is something that I think is the whole South Shore team gets behind, because it's really a terrific institution. It's oversubscribed. Last time I talked to Dr. Hickey, it per grade there were just a whole backup, 100-150, you know, individuals looking to get in. I am looking forward to the day that is either the South Shore Votech is either entirely rebuilt or at least significantly modified, because the mission has changed, it's expanded, and I am looking forward to the time, as we spoke about, Kevin, before, I'm looking forward to the time when not only the normal program of instruction during the day, but there'll be night courses there, there'll be weekends, there'll be summer courses when somebody from, you know, Hanover or Rockland or Halifax can possibly during the summer take a plumbing program there for credit towards graduation. There's just a lot of terrific stuff going forward. And I hope that the kids who are now in the sixth grade, maybe middle school, will be turning into the ninth, 10th, and 11th, 12th grade, and will be able to begin to take those type of courses there. And I believe, by the way, one of the things that I agree with the governor on, you brought that up, was the early college and funding for community colleges. I'm not sure if I would be as aggressive as she is, but I am happy they are looking at it, because I think the early college program integrated into the community college system, and by early college, I mean, for instance, a high school student would be able to take an accounting course or an anatomy or a chemistry course at the college level through the community college system while they're in high school, and have that count not only towards graduation, but towards matriculation into the state school or potentially into some of the private schools in here. Wouldn't that be a good thing?
That would be such a great thing, Rep. DeCost. I mean, just the cost savings alone to these families would be tremendous.
Absolutely. I was talking to my aide, and she's raising, and I think, get it right, I think it's a third, fifth, and seventh grader. That's the first thing that she brought up, that the college costs are so daunting. So if they could get a head start and keep them out of trouble during the summer. You know, I don't mean to be, I say that only half in jest, because I will tell you, I wish I had these opportunities back when I was in the late 70s, when I was in high school during the summer, because I absolutely would have taken advantage of them. In my case, particularly accounting, but as we've spoken about many times, and I know I've talked to Rep. LaNatra and all the South Shore caucus about this, that really, you know, the accounting you get, the calculus you get, the chemistry you get in high school is much the same as in college. It's the same stuff. So why not offer that to the kids in high school in the 10th, 11th, or 11th to 12th grade, something along those lines, and get them credits in both systems?
So I think the thing I would ask you is how often do you have a chance to speak with the folks in the trades, whether it's their respective unions? Is there a shortcoming when it comes to having the next gen, you know, folks who are going to be carpenters, electricians, plumbers, the culinary, you know, do we have enough folks who are enrolling and wanting to be a part of the culinary program? You know, you get the brass lantern that is over at South Shore Technical High School. Is there enough interest for the future?
You know, there's more than enough. As I alluded, there is a backlog and waitlisted individuals in all the grades. I, for instance, I spoke, the machining program up to the Votech has a number of companies locally that hire directly from there and train up, and I spoke to one of them who told me, I can't remember, I believe the gentleman runs a company out of Stoughton, but he remarked to me that, first of all, what a fantastic job, training job that the Vo-Tech does. What a terrific job in preparation to be machinists. But he said that they could double their output and he would hire every one of them. I believe that's a direct quote. And that is true, you know, as we have spoken about, and I know Rep. Lenatra hears the same things from the union folks and the folks in who are running private company in the trades. Carpenters, electricians, iron workers, the average age is well over 50. So we've got to start getting people in the pipeline, young men and women who want to train in these professions, or we're going to be in trouble.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are joined by State Rep. Dave DeCoste, representing the 5th Plymouth District, and that is Rockland, Norwell, Hanover, and one precinct in Hanson. But I think you lost a part of a precinct in one of the communities, right? Was that Hanover?
Right, yep. Norwell 3, Precinct 3 in Norwell, now falls under Representative Carney.
Okay. So I think I want to ask you in regards to, you know, you're telling us what you like about the governor's budget. Is there anything that concerns you, whether it's, you know, in its small details, maybe use of the millionaire's tax, whatever it may be? Is there anything in particular that sticks out and you're going to kind of watch the process and see how your colleagues and counterparts will react to the budget?
I think I probably speak for everyone on the South Shore that we probably hope to have some type of augmentation or reworking of the Chapter 70 formula and a little more specificity regarding special education costs, because right now they're, and Nancy, I haven't spoken to you for a while about this, but they really are killing our you know, it's a rough cost to track, because you never know what it's going to be from year to year, and they've got a budget for something that there's really no way to predict. So we're hoping to put some type of, I don't know if it would be an augmentation on the circuit breaker or what it would be, but we've got to find some way to address this, because it's really working against fiscal predictability at the municipal level, I guess you could say.
This isn't the first time that I've heard this, about reworking the Chapter 70, the formula, but I thought maybe it might have been quelled when the passage of the Student Opportunity Act just prior to COVID, and I think COVID kind of shelved it for a short bit, and then once things kind of somewhat return to normal, that it's kind of, you know, it's kicked back in. Am I wrong here?
Well, it's kicked back in, but at least from what I am hearing locally, the sped costs continue to climb.
They do. In my district as well, Rep. DeCoste. I think we're hearing it across the board down here on the South Shore. Like you said, we can't predict what that's going to be, but it has risen to such a high level that it's really affecting our school districts. Her budget did fully fund the Student Opportunity Act, but that is not, it doesn't really benefit us down here on the South Shore. Would you agree, Rep. DeCoste?
No, I agree, absolutely. I think all of us would probably, I think we're all in the same boat, because, you know, the local superintendents, all four of them, I should say five now that I've spoken to, or school committee members have indicated that it's rough to budget for something like that.
I also want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about anything that any legislation that either you have filed, maybe something that didn't necessarily get as far as it should have last session, that maybe you might have done a refile, maybe you jumped on board and co-sponsored some legislation that you kind of you want to kind of get the word out about.
Two things. Let me speak first of all. I've got a bill that is near and dear, and I know that the representative is married to a police officer, but in this state, it's a felony to assault a police horse or a police dog. This is a misdemeanor to assault a police officer. So I have once again filed a bill that would make it a felony to assault a police officer. And I don't think that's out of the norms, out of stream, or in any way you know, I think if it were put to a statewide vote, it would pass easily. So we're going to try to push that through this year. It's sponsored and the bipartisan group of individuals, so we'll see if we can't move that. And then, you know, a minor bill that I have co-sponsored that Josh Cutler has taken the lead on, that we've only talked a little bit. It touches on water, though, but right now there is some confusion, and the state needs to integrate into the current building code an improvement on instructions to implement gray water systems. And what that would do is basically encourage the establishment. Now, we could go further on that, but I would be happy if we just put together a system where the local building inspectors would have better guidance in terms of implementing those systems, because what they do is basically recycle water. So we have water problems. Every community, again, on the South Shore has, to some degree or another, water problems. And recycling gray water is what it's called. Usually it's water out of washing machines. Sometimes they collect rainwater, sinks, that type of thing. They filter it, and then they reuse it within a house. That has the capacity to save hundreds of millions of gallons every year, maybe billions of gallons in the Commonwealth. And, again, a small thing, and I am happy to work with Representative Cutler on that.
I'll have to look up that. Do you have the number on that bill, Rep?
I'll send
it. Can you text it to me, please?
I'll send it to you this evening. It's not off the top of my head, but I haven't memorized all 3,000 plus yet.
I think it's 6,000. 6,500. It's hard to memorize them all.
You bet.
So what other legislation do you have you filed that is part of the 6,000 to 7,000 bills that are going to be discussed and reviewed?
Well, we have bills regarding the senior circuit breaker and expansion of extending, and there are any number of them, again, filed right across the board, both parties, all political persuasions, that look to expanding the methods and amounts that we can advance for senior citizens towards their property taxes. So the governor's got a good start in terms of the senior circuit breaker. Locally, we're possibly looking at making 100% deductions for individuals who are, or a portion of that, depending on which bill you do, for individuals who are, for instance, 100% disabled veterans. There are also bills that would allow local communities to rework their system to allow either greater deferrals for taxation, property taxes. And so we're working on that. There's also a bill in this state we've talked, Kevin, that and I will have her on. It was based on a lady by the name of Ann Lynn Megason, who was raped as a college student, and she chose to have her child, and then the rapist pursued her, asserting parental rights. And believe it or not, we are one of the few states left in this nation that has still the policy that a rapist can assert parental rights. And again, there are probably a dozen bills filed by myself, again, both parties and right across the political spectrum, that seek to address this, and we're going to do a little bit better job this year, I hope, in at least moving that along, because that's another bill that I am sure that if we're ever put on the board would have near unanimous or unanimous consent, but we can never get it out of committee. But as I think the rep will agree with me, there are a lot of bills that are very popular that just don't see the light of day for one reason or another.
Well, Representative, we want to thank you so much for joining us this evening. I want to thank you for joining us, and I look forward to speaking with you again real soon.
Well, thank you, and Rep. Lenatra, I look forward to seeing you up at the State House maybe this Thursday.
Maybe this Thursday, Rep. DeCoste. I'll see you then.
See you then. Thank you very much.
You got it. There he is. State Rep. Dave DeCoste, our guest. We're going to step aside for just a half a second, but when we come back, John Brown, Gordon Andrews, we talk a little water, maybe something else, maybe more. You're tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WBTD.
is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
What is AA?
Alcoholics Anonymous is an international fellowship of people who have had a drinking problem.
It is non-professional and self-supporting.
AA is multiracial, apolitical, and available almost everywhere.
There are no age or education requirements. Membership is open to anyone who wants to do something about their drinking problem.
For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, visit AA.org. Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
Hey, Tiny, I got a testimonial here from Trisha Malloy. She says, thank you so much for getting the Jeep windshield in so quickly. We were heading to our annual Jimmy Buffett concert weekend when, pop, a rock breaks the windshield. PETA was right on it.
You embarrass me with praise. My boys would have done a good job even if it were a Barry Manilow weekend. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. Actually, I kind of like Barry Manilow.
You do?
My wife likes Barry Manilow. That's why I like Barry Manilow.
Smart man.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And joining myself and Kathy, State Rep Lenatra.
I'm just Kathy tonight, Kevin.
You're just Kathy?
Yeah.
Okay. We have Mr. John Brown. It was a couple of weeks ago you were in, we were chatting.
Yeah, and you said, come on back. And I said, why not? And here we are again.
Exactly. So he reached out a couple of days ago. I was like, hey, is there a way for me to pop in? And the original idea was to see if we can get another colleague from, is it Select Board or Selectman?
It's Select Board, yeah.
Select Board to come in and talk, do updates in regards to the public safety complex. Mm-hmm. And anything else, Pembroke. Then he throws me a curveball. He goes, hey, how about if I have Gordon Andrews come in? I go, is Gordon, you know, a Pembroke member? Is he on it? He goes, no, he's Halifax. I go, Halifax.
It's all about the South Shore. You know, Kev. Come on.
It's all about the 12th Plymouth.
It is. But so I'm like, well, what would you guys talk about? Now, I didn't know if, like, John was going to, like, interview Gordon. Or about something, or if we would have a topic. So I'm like, well, what would the topic be? And I believe the topic we brought up was, I believe both communities share the Mompanset Ponds, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have North, South Rivers integrated everything to Silver Lake, which is a huge, take a water in my district. So I'm just like, hey, why not? Because I said, especially with, I was telling you, Gordon has a lot of knowledge, institutional knowledge, with a lot of stuff going on the South Shore. So, and especially of knowing what he knows and even learning a few things. You never know tonight on a couple things that's going on within Halifax. And I can say what's going on in Pembroke and kind of go from there.
Okay. Well, again, I was thinking water. I don't know if you want to go with that, but.
Yeah.
Now, you have previously served school committee?
The elementary school committee, Silver Lake. And the
Talk right into that microphone. It loves you.
Sure.
Put it right in front of your mouth.
There we go.
Beautiful.
The Halifax Elementary School Committee, Silver Lake School Committee, and the Board of Selectmen in Halifax.
Okay. And so how do you know John? Are you guys just kind of friendly? Are you a member of the Dull Men's Club? I mean,
I'm not a member of that club.
Yeah, he's too young.
I think just from being around local politics, being both previous members of the Board of Selectmen, mm-hmm. Talking about issues that affect the community, definitely Rep. Lenatra will tell you that water is a big issue. We've spent a lot of money in Halifax buying chemicals and dumping them mm-hmm. into Mompanset Ponds, and that's not really a...
cyanobacteria?
Yeah, it's not really an effective solution to a long-term problem, so...
Okay. It isn't like Halifax or Pembroke use the water for drinking purposes. It's purely recreational, am I correct?
Well, for our ponds and for the lake, Silver Lake, yes, that's definitely for us. But we have to worry about Furnace Pond in ours, where it's, what, Abington and Rockland take that water. And then you also have, you know, Brockton taking from Furnace and Oldham, I believe, for what they need, too. And seeing what happened last summer on how much water they take and then how much it actually is, I wouldn't say wasted, but to make sure it's drinkable for their communities, it's just amazing how many gallons there is. And especially with us, we're having a new well being put in. We're trying to do more storage for our water so we don't have to worry about what we did last year, where we have emergency, you know, stoppage saying, you have to stop everything, please.
It was a terrible time. I remember that.
Oh, it was awful.
Terrible time.
And when you guys were talking earlier, mm-hmm. how hot it was and what it was, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I was using my humidifier water to water my rosemary plants.
Oh, my.
So there's the gray water right there, what Mr. DeCoste was talking about.
He was talking about gray water.
See, I listen.
How about Halifax? How is it affecting Halifax these days?
So, I mean, that we have a lot of water issues right now with the quality of our wells. We're spending over $1 million to redo the YMCA well right now. There's another article, I believe, coming up. The issue with the quality of the wells, the amount of water that we're using. Halifax and Pembroke, I believe, can both hook up to the Brockton system. Mm-hmm. But, you know, each time that we go to do that, the consistency of the water is definitely different.
Now, you're not using the Aquaria water. Is that what you're talking about? Or just the water that's processed from Silver Lake?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, and actually, last year, because of the water issues we had, Pembroke did finally re-hook up to the emergency line to Brockton. If we do need it or not.
When was it disconnected? When was it taken offline? Does anybody know?
Not a clue. But basically found that, and we were like, yeah, we're going to do this again just in case it happens and we need help.
Now, does the city of Brockton have any say as to... Because I ask this strictly because I believe when it comes to the one community that Brockton actually sells water to... is Whitman.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. So I'm like, well, it kind of goes through Whitman to get to Brockton. How does that happen?
Well, we have they negotiate basically how many gallons they're able to supply us if we do need it. And that's how I was told with last year during our crisis that we had during the summer.
And the last time we hooked up was when the water tower was taken down to sandblast the inside. So they had to replace the gate, actually. Took a couple more weeks than they had realized the job was going to take when they had to replace it.
Now, does that come at an extra cost if you're getting the water from Brockton? Does Brockton charge Halifax? Do they charge Pembroke?
I don't remember what the rate was exactly. That we were charged.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Since we haven't had to do it, we just basically the hookup itself. So just happy we do have an emergency backup.
But the emergency backup, and I again, for clarification, it isn't for either one of the Monpont ponds. It's for Silver Lake.
Correct.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's for the processed water that comes out of Silver Lake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the feed to replenish Silver Lake is Monpont ponds.
Right.
So it's never the water directly out of Monpont. It flows into Silver Lake, then it's treated at the treatment plant and then put into the system.
Now, my understanding is that the one thing they never want to have happen is have any of the water, the water that has the cyanobacteria in the Monpont ponds mm-hmm. to somehow find its way into Silver Lake.
Right.
Correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yep. And has that been successful to date that either of you know?
To my knowledge, there hasn't been an issue. I don't know if Rep. Winatra...
I haven't heard, and I'm sure Pine Dubois would be calling me right up.
Exactly, especially her information and what she knows. Mm-hmm. She'd let you know real quick.
She's my go-to.
The one time that I actually had a chance to interview her, have a conversation with her, probably the one soundbite, I think I've told Rep. Linatra this a couple of times, was when communities were going to Brockton City Hall, mm-hmm. and they were having a meeting to talk about water, and there was a sprinkler going, and it was watering a little patch of grass, and they were watching all this water, not really doing a lot, on this little small patch of grass, and all the water going into the drain, into the gutter.
while our communities are on water bans. They're, right. they're watering the sidewalks.
Yeah. It's exactly, mm-hmm. that was exactly her thought, is that many communities are observing a water ban, even to this day. Yep. Any concerns in regards to the winter we've had? Because we haven't seen much snow. You know, the precipitation has been limited. I mean,
pretty limited. I mean, when it rains, it really rains, but it doesn't rain that frequently.
Right.
Right. Well, the last time for the rain, especially right before, I guess, this weird snow that we had last time.
Is that what we're calling it?
Well, it was more slush than anything else, but I was more concerned about black ice for our communities. Mm-hmm. They said that basically we were, for the Commonwealth itself, we were up about a good 10 inches for rain itself of the Commonwealth for the year. But yeah, snow, with you want the snow melting, and so not a lot of evaporation. You know, I know more about roads, water, and all the stuff being in this job right now than I've ever thought I'd ever have a chance to do so.
we definitely had an issue with water flowing through Pembroke into Halifax and then into East Bridgewater over to Robbins Pond where the levee on that private reservoir let go. And if you drive around right now the communities, you'll see the water levels really high.
That is interesting. You know, I was going to mention this, is I still remember back in the day in the Enterprise when they used to print what the Silver Lake level was every day. They don't do that anymore. They probably don't really.
Do they still have the Enterprise?
Yeah, they're still around. They do a couple of stories here and there. It's more so online, though, than anything else. But that was the one thing that I always remembered fondly was where are the water levels at this particular time? Anything further we want to kind of talk about? I mean, what are the two communities doing just to kind of keep an eye on things as we get warmer weather ahead? Mm-hmm. Are you hoping for, you know, a wet spring? Most people are like, oh, and I hate rain. But you know what? We need it.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I mean, I don't want, like, torrential downpours like sometimes that we've had and the massive wind because of the nor'easter. I was very happy that, honestly, at least my community on the South Shore, we had one person who lost electricity. And in that last storm, I said, "Pooh, that's pretty good."
Because
usually
great.
We're down for like 75% of ours. And we've talked to National Grid saying, how can you help us out? Because electricity is now a need, not just a want, because people work from home. And even before COVID, I was talking about this. And what are we trying to do to help our communities out to make sure that they're not down for 5 days?
Yeah, National Grid did have a program a few years ago when they went around the feed line for Pembroke runs through Halifax. So they went and they cut down all the trees that came before us. They asked permission for some areas just to basically cut away all the limbs and the trees that were overhanging the lines to make sure that Pembroke's power wasn't going down so often.
Yeah.
A lot of communities normally do that in the fall as a preventive measure so that doesn't happen. Is that something that your respective communities try to do as well? So if there's any kind of overhanging growth or trees that it's going to be one less thing that a crew's going to have to go out in the middle of the night in inclement weather.
I think you see right now that a lot of the communities are stressed for help. So having programs to go cut down trees has kind of been pushed off the back burner for a while. I know that Halifax is doing it right now through the highway department, but it seems like it's an issue that needs to be maintained throughout the South Shore.
Yeah, and we've had on 53, I know for a couple storms, that National Grid and our tree department have been out making sure that no wires are like being impeded by trees to make sure that we're not going to lose power.
Now, is it a tree department or do you have a tree warden?
We have tree department. Yes, it's all part of the DPW.
Is there a warden that's ahead of it? The head of it?
Yeah. Is your warden paid more than a dollar?
I think my warden is probably Gene Fulmine, who's the head of the DPW.
Ours is the highway surveyor, which gets paid a dollar, I believe.
Really? To be for the tree
that
warden?
Yeah. For that position? Yeah, for that position. Title?
But that's an elected position, yes?
Highway surveyor is elected, but the tree warden is appointed position.
Oh, how about that? Okay. Something we might have to dig into some other time. quickly on Halifax, political races. And I know that not too long ago, you were without key members of the board, select board. How's that doing these days?
I'm not really sure. I've been trying to stay away.
And John, I know you wanted to kind of give a little bit of an update. Where do things stand with the the public safety complex. Mm-hmm. How's that going? I believe that's actually a historical building that had to be relocated, and there was a conversation about
it. Yeah, yeah. And then when we last spoke, the Turner House has been approved to be moved by the Historic District Commission so we can get this project moving forward. The price in and of itself of what this our public safety building for this and on Monroe Street are going well. Our next meeting for the public safety building will be actually March 30th. And after that, we're trying to do a presentation for the whole community in the Pembroke Public Library right after that. So probably around 7 o'clock. There'll be more details later on.
So is it the public safety, where in conjunction is the public safety complex? Is that going to be anywhere near the new community center that's going to be erected?
Well, because more fires and more of transporting folks up to South Shore Hospital or wherever else to get to Route 3, I'll be on 53 and 14, basically where the Sunoco station is around there, and then Monroe Street, well, not actually School Street, Monroe Street, to make sure that we have, you know, access for both sides of our community.
Can I ask you an interesting off-topic question?
Sure.
Being a member of the select board, any conversations in regards to the situation at Brockton Hospital and how that's affecting your community? Or maybe your communities. I don't know how much in the know you are, yeah. But there's a 10-alarm fire a couple of weeks ago, yeah. And it's kind of stressing the South Shore right now because that's one less medical facility for folks to be transported to.
Yeah, I haven't heard much, but especially for Brockton, because I know a lot of my community is either down at in Plymouth or basically up the South Shore. The majority of our runs that we do.
Go to the South Shore.
Yeah, correct.
What's the cost, again, just to remind folks, of the public safety building? I mean, is that something that's being discussed openly, or is it kind of a done deal that you've already got, that the town's already got bonding for it?
Right now, basically, we're discussing almost $62 million for both buildings.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's 61 and change, but at the same time, a lot of the contingency money and other stuff that they're talking about is above, so we don't do what the community center did, unfortunately, where we had to go back to town meeting and ask for more. I'd rather have it high and then bring our costs down when we actually do permanent borrowing.
Now, is there any conversation in regards to hiring a general contractor? Has that happened? Or is that still part of the conversation?
That's still part of the conversation because we still have to get our schematics and go through the process through Mass General Law to make sure that we have all our ducks in a row. We can't just say, hey, we have schematics now. We can spend this money when we don't have it from the community yet.
Do you have a general excitement by the community that this is going to be a new complex like this? Or is there a concern that, uh-oh, my taxes are going to be going up for this debt exclusion?
Everyone I've spoken to is all about public safety, but yeah, it's that bottom line right now because it's so much in the air of what the final cost is going to be to the average taxpayer per year.
Hmm. I'm like hogging the whole conversation. Is there anything you want to kind of throw in?
I'm still trying to, like, 53-14 in my head. That's what I was trying to work out where that is.
Yeah, 53-14. Barker and Washington Street.
Okay.
So. Basically, right before Pleasant, you have the Sunoco there, and then you have the Yes Building, which used to be a box factory.
Yes, of course, of course.
I know so much history of this property, too. It's amazing. Basically, of like who's owned it, what's going on, what it used to be for, I mean, for cranberry boxes, for artillery boxes back in the day.
Wow.
So.
Definitely interesting.
And do you know where the building's going to go? Where are you going to move it to?
Right there on the corner.
Just around the corner.
Yeah.
Excellent. So it won't be far.
No, exactly. And then the other one on School Street will be where our former pit is now.
Okay.
For tree brush and all that.
So what's the cost incurred to move this building?
That is right now estimated a little under $1 million.
Ooh.
Or like a little, exactly. It kind of hurts, but... I said the historic district. In the historic district, we have to follow the rules that basically the Secretary of State has put out for these district commissions to make sure that we're doing everything proper and under the law.
And what was the building being used for anything? So why is that? Why it's being saved and moved?
Because the historic district commission deemed it historical. So they want it saved because of the history of the property itself, of the Turners owning it back in the 1600s on.
Wow.
But the house itself is over sometime in the 1800s when it was actually built.
Again, we've been speaking with John Brown. That was the voice you just heard from the Pembroke Select Board. Gordon Andrews, former elected official in Halifax. Anything as we wrap up this segment, gentlemen? Anything?
I would just like to say that I'm happy you asked me to be on, and I know that Rep. Lenatra is going to do a great job for both Halifax and Pembroke. You guys were previously talking about Chapter 70 and its sped costs.
We've talked about school budget many times, Gordon and I.
So I think that if you look at the Student Opportunity Act, where they're funding it one time, I would hope the communities realize it's a one-time increase and they're not talking about major changes to the Chapter 70 funding like you talked about.
But that isn't something that will take place over the life of the legislation itself.
It's
supposedly it's a seven-year bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happens after the 7 years? Does it sunset, or is it a matter that the legislation has to – the governor, respective administration, and the legislation – the legislature has to discuss it further?
Correct. We would have to discuss it further.
But this fully funds the amount that they had mm-hmm. listed in 2019. So
right.
that's the bump that you're getting for this fiscal year is going to be it.
Interesting. So it sounds like a conversation that we'll have to have somewhere down the road when we have more
There's
information.
Always school funding is the nemesis of all state reps. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. Because it hurts. You know, we're members of the community and most of us have children in school as well. And, you know, it hurts.
Well, that's gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Kev.
And we're going to step aside. Hour number one, gone. Up ahead, hour number two, Alex Bezanson, Rick Collins on deck. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back.
We are back with our next guests. We have Alex Bezanson, Abington Selectman, and Rick Collins on the Abington Planning Board in the studio with us.
Yeah, we should probably give a little bit more of a rundown on both Alex and on Rick.
That was a pretty good start. I don't know.
You like that?
That was pretty good.
Yeah, but you had this, both you and Alex. I mean, Alex is going to be is actually here for a twofer. Not only is he here to kind of talk a little bit about this situation, this issue about the commuter rail and the community of Abington, but also you and Lisa, your wife are the founder of the HUG Foundation.
And what's HUG stand for?
Help Us Give. And I usually Matt Nelson is here, and I usually say, what does that mean? He'll bark
no,
right out.
No, Joe, going, way back in the day.
Sure, yeah, Flood Joe,
yeah,
Joe Rossi. So not only is you here to talk a little bit about the upcoming event, right? The Ice Huggers taking on the Bruins alumni. Right. We'll talk about that later this half hour. But Rick is more than just he's an Abington resident.
True.
Serves on multiple committees in the town of Abington.
As does his wife.
Yep. As does his wife. Used to write for the Patriot Ledger. Do you do that any further?
I am currently...
Here in the area, do you kind of throw something? Do they still accept correspondence from folks who are willing to put something together?
I hear they give you coupons for free newspapers if you write the letter these days.
You have to cut those out, though?
Right.
Oh, wait. You have to digitally cut those out. But also, communications guy for Bob Hedlund.
Yep.
Former host of Monday Night Talk.
The founder of this program.
Yes.
Filled in a couple times way back when I had hair. And
still got a patch. A
little bit.
Yeah,
little bit. And I'm currently the editor, publisher, writer, photographer, and bundler of the Abington News.
Bundler.
I like that.
That he started during COVID.
That I started during COVID.
I'm still upset at you. I still have not received one of those blogger t-shirts, which were wildly popular for a small amount of time.
I do owe you a blogger t-shirt because we do run a blog.
Go ahead. It's kind of an inside joke. Go ahead. Alex,
no,
I cut you off.
It's just a great thing that he's doing for Abington because we don't have a local paper. And, this isn't actually a paper, but it's online news. And he has a website, abingtonnews.org.
Yep.
And on Facebook. And it's been a tremendous help, especially during COVID. And even now, he publishes all the upcoming meetings every week and recaps the selectman meetings and important meetings. And it's been doing great.
We actually had a chance to meet over breakfast this morning. I guess we were the second crew in after you in the wood. You guys were there, kind of opening the place. We kind of closed it.
Right.
talking about some of the upcoming politics.
And while we're on Martin's, where you ate this morning, obviously.
Yes.
Fred Villa from Martin's was the Grand Marshal yesterday in the parade. Great guy, a recipient of the Abington's Best Award a little while ago. Great guy.
Indeed. But the thought is to have a conversation. I've seen multiple reports. I've had conversations with both of you gentlemen in regards to the commuter rail. And there's great concern in the community in regards to the safety of various the seven crossings in Abington that the commuter rail goes through.
So, right. Yep.
And I also I was brief with you, Rick, but you go back in regards to Greenbush and a lot of the issues with the commuter rail way back when.
Yeah, in a previous life when I was a reporter for the Patriot Ledger, one of my beats was the construction of Greenbush back in 04, 05, 06, 07. So I got a firsthand look at the mitigation agreements that were happening between the communities and the MBTA, the fist fights that were happening between the local officials and the state officials. I mean, not literal, but I mean figurative.
Pretty close.
It was very controversial, I remember.
Yeah.
Yep.
The lawsuits that were filed, the arguments about why they needed to have four quad gates and why they needed a whistle-free zone, and all these arguments back and forth, and spent years watching this. And when I moved to Abington in 2009, the first thing that popped up again was commuter rail, trains, whistles, safety. Right. This sounds familiar. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is, I think, a failure to recognize that there's a clear safety problem in the middle of Abington in one of our more densely settled neighborhoods.
Now, you've also been someone who has been kind of calling out, I mean, your previous time as selectman.
Yeah, when I was on the board from 15 to 18, I knew there was a problem. And I called the MBTA to come before us and address some of the issues. And it took Rick and Senator Keenan to finally get them there after 6 months. And they did show up at our meeting. And some of the things I brought up, and this is the minutes from November 13th, 2017, that they would, Selectman Bazanson expressed concerns, particularly about North Abington Crossing, and suggest raise barriers or channelize markers. To be brief about it, though, I wanted quad gates, I wanted slower trains, and I wanted more education. I wanted education in schools. And they said they would look into all this and get back to us, and they never did. So when I got back on the board in 2020, I was getting onto this again, and it was number one on my list when I became chairman last May. Coincidentally, a week and a half after I became chairman, we had another fatality. And an 18-year-old girl, 2 weeks from graduation. And like Rick said, you know, North Ave, we've had, well, go back to 30 incidents on this line since 1997. 60% of them have happened in Abington, 18 of them. And 10 of those have happened on North Ave of Birch Street within a 200-yard stretch. So for anyone to say that that's not an issue, whether you're familiar with this or not, there's an issue there on North Ave and Birch Street. To have this many incidents in that short area, there's definitely a problem here.
Where are some of the other, you mentioned that there have been several, you mentioned 18 in Abington alone. Are there neighboring communities or communities that are along this particular commuter rail line that are having similar issues, whether it's the speed of the train, whether it's the safety equipment, whether it's, you know, a lack of channelization of these, Rick?
So Weymouth has had five. Just along this line, all on the Pond Street intersection up by Mar Riley's Cafe, if anyone knows that intersection. Mm-hmm. They've had five in that intersection. I think Kingston's had four or five accidents down in that town, but every other town's had one or two.
And so then all of a sudden you see Abington and it's 18 out of 30. The number is just stands out more than anything else.
I asked in 2017 to explore quad gates. Abington doesn't have quad gates on any of our intersections. Part of the problem is one street, basically, Railroad Street, coincidentally enough called Railroad Street, is within 30 feet of the track. No other town has a street that close to the tracks. And because there aren't quad gates, when you're going down the street to turn left, there are no gates there. And we've had people turn onto the tracks by mistake. And there was an older gentleman, I think in 2017, 16, that was killed when his pickup truck went on North Ave. And to get the MBTA to listen to us, it's like talking to a wall. So the town of Abington, at my and Rick's suggestion to the town manager, to hire an independent engineer to survey all the crossings in Abington. I believe it cost us about $10,000, which we shouldn't be paying, but we did. And they've come back and identified several issues along the track, and we should have their final suggestions this week. Once we have that, we're going to contact the MBTA again.
Would you contact Keolis, or would you contact the MBTA themselves, the state?
Well, we will contact the MBTA because it's their train. I will be reaching out to our state representative. She's aware of it, Allison, and John Keenan, and Stephen Lynch. I'm going to talk to Jim Cantwell to get Senator Markey's ear. We're not going to let this go this time. In 2018, when I get off the board, no one else took this in it, and it just sat there until I get back on, and we had several more deaths since then. So several of the Boston News places have interviewed myself and Scott and the mother of one of the victims. And we're hoping to get the publicity now to really get something done about it.
So do you think that speed is an issue as well? And if you could just go back and, just for our listening audience, explain what a quad gate is.
So a quad gate is four gates that come down that blocks the entire road.
Simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
When a train is coming. All Abington has is a gate with the flow of the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
If the traffic's going east, there's a gate there. There's nothing on the other side of the street.
Ooh.
So people can go around it. And that happens, and people shouldn't be going around it. But
they do.
When you have a street that close to the tracks and a dark, foggy night, and a lot of these accidents have happened at night.
Right.
And yes, there's been alcohol and there's been other issues, but it really doesn't matter. Had there been quad gates, a lot of these accidents would not have happened. There was a girl killed, the first one, 15-year-old Kelly Boyd,
97 or 98.
She was stopped behind a car. A train went by, and she went around the car and across the track, and a train came the other way. She was the first death in Abington, and she had her bike. Had there been quad gates, she would not have dragged her bike under the gate and gone on the track. In my opinion, I don't believe she would have. I think she would have waited till the gates gone up. Had there been quad gates, I don't believe that older gentleman that died in 2017 would have been able to get on the track and die. So the MBTA's position is the people shouldn't be on the track. They're absolutely right, the people shouldn't be on the track. But people are getting on the tracks by outrageous numbers in Abington, and it's not happening in other towns. Scituate, Cohasset, Hingham have quad gates. They have slower trains. We don't have that.
I think speed definitely should be an issue. But when you senior citizens, right, or inexperienced drivers, so I'm glad what about teaching children that are just about to get their license, right? Is that in our driver's education,
No, I'm not sure it is. And I want the education back in the schools, mm-hmm. and I want the education at the senior center also.
I agree.
Not just, you know, once one and done at the school. This needs to be repeated a couple of times a year for different classes,
mm-hmm.
every year, not just in the beginning when the train got here in 97. Those kids are all adults now and have their own kids.
What are your thoughts? You know, the recent reports that they're reducing the speeds in Boston because they've had issues. They had the issues with the Orange Line train, trains coming off the track, the Green Line. Any thoughts between either of you?
I mean, I think the biggest thing, speed is an issue because when they're going that fast, they can't stop. And, you know, it takes a mile to stop a train that's moving 70 miles per hour.
Sure.
And, you know, there was an incident, I think, 4 or 5 years ago during the St. Patrick's Day parade where the trains were operating at a reduced speed because of the parade, and a vehicle was crossing the tracks and died. No, the vehicle died. The train was able to stop before it hit the vehicle because it had enough warning. So it's kind of a little bit of a pilot case there. But I think more than anything, what this fails to recognize is that there are unique conditions in North Abington that exist pretty much no place else in the region, which is you have all of these crossings within 200 yards of each other, 300 yards. You have three crossings within 300 yards. And you have two streets that run parallel to the tracks, all within 30 feet. You don't have that anywhere else in the district,
right.
in the region. And you have a situation where there's also a vacant old rail yard right next to the tracks. So if you're standing on some of these grade crossings and you're not familiar with the area, you can't necessarily easily tell where the road is versus where the train tracks are versus where the gates are. So it doesn't matter how fast the train's going. It's the fact that this whole layout is just not done well. It's not a situation that exists anywhere else.
There's an area, I'm told, and I haven't seen it for myself, but I'm told there's an area between Birch Street and North Ave where there is a temporary fence. It's not even a permanent fence there. The fence on Railroad Street stops, 20 yards before it hits the pavement?
Yeah.
Going down there. I mean, it's just too easy for people to make a mistake and get on the tracks.
So, I mean,
the latest one, Caitlin McCarthy. May 13th, I believe it was, of last year. They were coming with their friends from Birch Street, from Monroe Street, from the rail trail. They had headsets on, and they were listening to music and skipping along and didn't see the train. Again, had there been quad gates, they were walking down Birch Street, they would have walked into the quad gate, and it would have stopped them. So I don't know the cost of the quad gates, but how many more lives do we need to lose to make it worth it?
Is it strictly just the quad gates? Could it be lighting? Could it be signage? Is it a matter
lighting? Lighting was another problem there, and it took State Representative Allison Sullivan after that incident to finally get the light turned on there.
Interesting.
And the light was there, but it wasn't turned on.
So what course of action, other than trying to, you know, have public conversations, get the word into the media, anything that you can do with the Department of Transportation, do you have to go to another level other than going to Senator Markey and saying, hey, I need your help?
Well, this is the unconscionable part, so we can't even get the MBTA to come to Abington to talk about this with us. So, I mean, they haven't been there. We're going on 10 months now since Caitlin McCarthy was killed. We're coming on 8 months since there was another death in August, and we still can't get the MBTA officials to come down and have a conversation in Abington about what's happening. And to us, that's just, it's unconscionable that this isn't happening.
What's the method of contact? Is it a matter of calling? Is it a matter of showing up at the office saying, we want to speak to the interim?
Well, I think at this point, we're just waiting for the final suggestions from our engineer, and then we're going to reach out to Allison and John Keenan if they don't respond to us
again,
and we'll reach out to the governor and lieutenant governor, and we'll hopefully force them to come before us and address these issues.
Yeah, they need to put the pressure on. I agree.
And we'll reach out to Representative Kathy Lenatra because she's on the Kingston line.
I am on the Kingston line. Yeah. And as you know, my husband's a police officer in Kingston. So, you know, and where it is on 3A, we don't have quad gates either. And I understand now that you explained it, there is a street, and I could see how easily someone would go, especially an older person, dark, or an inexperienced driver.
Right.
I can easily see it.
What about legal counsel? Any conversation with legal counsel? Could you put forth a suit against the MBTA for their ignorance, for their
We've made ignorance. It clear to the town manager, and the town manager is on board with, we're going to use all necessary tools to get something done, finally.
And so you all, the assessment you're waiting for from this this firm or individual, it'll also give a cost analysis as to what the cost will be for the quad gates.
I'm not sure that will be included, but they are going to make suggestions to us. We may add more suggestions to that before we present it to the MBTA and the governor and the lieutenant governor.
In the past, it had been estimated between $500,000 and $1 million per intersection, per grade crossing, because of...
It's that bad.
Yeah, because it's not just the gates, but it's also now got to do timing, electrical work, but it's also you have to build out the median strips leading up to the quad gates. It's just the whole rigmarole to go through it that makes it, at least according to them, an expensive proposition. It's not just, you know, installing another gate on the other side, that there's a whole other set of it. But our point is, well, what is the cost analysis for protecting people from not getting killed constantly in Abington?
Another thing I brought up in 2017 was on a sidewalk on Summer Street by our senior center, they don't even have a gate on the sidewalk.
Right.
And they said they would get onto that, and they've never done anything for that either.
Interesting. Anything that we haven't mentioned in regards to this particular situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think the preliminary report came back was that there were issues, but for the most part, it met the minimum safety requirements as required by the Federal Railroad Administration. And I think our question is, well, at what point after you have 10 accidents and 3 fatalities in a single stretch, is this bare minimum not enough? Where it's like, all right, we have to take another look at this and say, we have to do more than just the bare minimum. It needs whatever that next level of protection is. And I think that's the question we have is, at what point? I mean, how many accidents do we need? Do we need 20, 30, 40 accidents?
What's the number? And they're allowed to do 70 miles an hour, but it doesn't mean they have to do 70 miles an hour.
Excellent point. Well, let's definitely revisit this when you have an update. If you get this report and you're willing to come on and share it, gentlemen, sure. You're welcome to come back in a couple of weeks and provide the details, and maybe you might hear from somebody from the MBTA or Keolis who might want to. I mean, there is an interim general manager right now. I would want to think that if he's seeing these reports and hearing these reports, that he might want to, you know, if he wants the job, he might want to be a little proactive.
Do you know when the new general manager is going to be?
It's interesting that you say that. I was at the St. Patrick's Day breakfast yesterday in South Boston, and that was, you know, it's a roast, and that the tea was the topic.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Fantastic. Well, I want to take a couple of moments to talk a little bit about the HUG Foundation event coming up April 8th. August, the ice will be melted by then. No, talk to us about this. We've had you on every year to talk about it. Going up the Ice Huggers, your Ice Huggers.
My Ice Huggers against the Bruins alumni.
And I want to say that the Bruins alumni have actually fortified their roster as of late. I think I've seen a couple of Hall of Famers or potential Hall of Famers who are now in the ranks.
Yeah, so it's interesting, probably 4 or 5 years ago, myself and Bob Cormier, the head trainer, and the other two, Mike and Frank, we were all talking about, you know, we only got a couple years left and this is going to be all over. But we've got so many of the young guys coming in and staying around. Tuukka Rask, Chara, Adam McQuaid have all bought houses within the vicinity of Boston. And they're going to raise their families here, and they've all been playing. Not regularly, but because they are all doing other things. Tuukka and Adam are working for the Bruins, and Chara's just got a million things to do. He's prepping for the marathon right now, but he has played a couple of games. So it's interesting to see that. And we had a kid, Josh Hennessy, that grew up in Rockland, that played a short time for the Bruins and for some other teams. He played his first game this year. So we've got a lot of the younger players coming now, and Pat Leahy and Mike Motto and Danny Lacouture, and we've got a lot of young legs now.
when do you expect to know what the Bruins roster will be for the game against? How do you plan to prepare for?
Well, the way they do it is Karen, our secretary, the Bruins alumni secretary. I say I because I'm one of the assistant. Yes, one of the assistant trainers for them. But she sends out like the middle of March. She sends out the games for April, and then everyone has to contact Frank Simonetti, who is our new president.
Congratulations,
and,
Frank!
Ask for the games that they want to play. So we won't have our roster. We usually get it about a week or 10 days before the games. And they're always changed because guys have commitments and stuff. So I won't know our roster till probably around April 1st.
How are tickets selling? I mean, are there tickets available? I would think that usually this is a hot commodity.
Yeah, there are tickets available. There will be tickets available at the door, but you can also go to our website, helpusgivema.org, and you can buy tickets there. And if you listen to Rob in the morning, I just gave them 3 pairs of tickets that he'll be giving away.
Ooh. How about if someone wants to be a part of the Ice Huggers, are you looking for any skaters, or are you all set, the roster all set?
Unfortunately, we're all set right now for the roster. And, you know, credit goes out to our Ice Huggers, who each have to raise a minimum of $1,000 to play, and the money goes to the Hug Foundation, and we do pay the Bruins alumni a fee to come and play. But all the money that Hug Foundation gets, as you know, just stays local. And
we've mentioned time and time again some of the folks that you have helped that I know personally. I've sent them your way. And
One that comes to mind
is Billy.
Billy Clancy. Yeah,
Billy Clancy. Billy, who was suffering from a debilitating disease. And the one thing, I think he had MS.
ALS.
ALS, sorry. Yeah. ALS. But he wanted to see, I think, the cup.
Yeah, Kevin calls me right after they won the cup and says, can you get the cup? And I said,
I didn't see what he did.
Yes, you did. Can you get the cup?
Can you get someone to be able to go and see the cup?
I said, I can do a lot of things, but I can't get the cup. But we called Bob Sweeney, and we brought Billy and his brother to the Bruins Casino Night, which, as you know, the Hug Foundation started that years and years ago.
Ice and Dice.
And they took it over, but where they were able to meet the entire team and have pictures with everyone. So it was a great thing for Billy, and sadly he passed a few years later.
But it was something, it was always a special moment that his family always were very thankful.
That still friends with his family to this day. Yeah.
So if folks want to get tickets, they can go online, I believe.
They can go online, they can find it on Eventbrite, or they can go right to our website, helpusgivema.org, and there's a link there for tickets. And if you just want to make a donation, you can certainly do that also. We'll have some great raffle prizes. We have a Chara jersey, and I just got word today, Charlie Coyle signed some jerseys for us. So,
oh, wonderful.
So we'll have at least one of those.
I hear he's from Weymouth.
He is, yes. And I got to give a shout out to my pal Eddie Page at Next Page, who knows his father real well, and he was the one that got the jersey signed for us.
Awesome. Well, listen, gentlemen, thank you for coming in not only to talk about a very important and eye-opening issue in regards to the MBTA train, the commuter rail, and those 7 crossings, and also talking about a great event that's coming up on April 8th. So, and that's at the Rockland Ice Arena.
Rink at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. So we're going to step aside, and the final segment of Monday Night Talk is coming up. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced Cancer Care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Stephen Caridianis here, conductor of the Plymouth Philharmonic. Our excellent musicians take center stage when our orchestra performs Fanfare on Amazing Grace by Adolphus Hailstork, the over-the-top Pathetique Symphony by Tchaikovsky, and the Massachusetts premiere of The Cold Mountain Suite by composer superstar Jennifer Higdon. That's Saturday night, March 25th at 7:30. For details, log on to plymouthphil.org. Sponsored in part by the Mass Cultural Council, with additional support from C. Plymouth and WATD.
Invest your time in listening to CAPE Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. CAPE Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talks. I'm Kathy Lynn Archer here with Kevin Tachi. We only have a half hour left, Kevin. I can't believe it.
It's gone.
It flies by.
Told you.
But we have my favorite guest of the night.
Who's that?
We have Amy Naples with the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce, and she's on to talk about a great event that's happening Friday. How are you doing, Amy?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing? And what a nice welcome, Kathy. You're one of my favorites, too.
Yes, we are. We get each other's back. Aww. We love each other.
We love each other, yes.
So tell everybody, what's happening Friday night in Kingston at the Indian Pond Country Club?
Well, we are so excited. It is our second annual Dancing with Our Stars to benefit the Plymouth One Fund. So that is happening this Friday night. Show begins at 7:45 p.m. Kind of the gist of it is we have seven local stars representing various industries throughout the community who are going to be competing for the Mirrorball Trophy. They are performing a 90-second routine in front of a 450-plus audience, as well as live on PAC TV. So
no pressure there.
Exciting competition among some amazing people. No pressure. You know what it's like, Kathy.
I do. I'm so happy that I'll be judging this year instead of dancing. Although I have to say, dancing was very fun, but there was a lot of pressure with all those people. Can you tell us who our dancers are?
Of course, I'd be happy to. The dancers are, so they, like I said, represent various industries. We have Lori Carraher from Eastern Bank, David Gallerani from Cape Auto Body, Carl Santino from the Plymouth Fire Department, Mark Manfredi from the Plymouth Police Department, Michelle Kopeng representing REMAX Real Estate and the Plymouth Area Coalition for the Homeless, Brian Grattan from Alden Park, and last but not least, Kevin Hood from Hood Remodeling.
Wow. And they're being taught to dance by, we should give a shout out to the Fred Astaire.
Absolutely. So this event could not be possible without Fred Astaire. So it is presented by Fred Astaire Dance Studio of Plymouth. The owners, Casey Baird and Forrest, are just absolutely amazing. They are the ones who came to us with this idea and said, hey, listen, we really would love to do this. We have a great concept. What do you think? We would like to give back. We are a recipient of the Plymouth One Fund. We'd love to give back. This would be a really fun fundraiser. And that was last year. And last year was completely bigger than we ever even imagined. We sold out so quickly. We raised a ton of money for the Plymouth One Fund. So we said, Casey, we have to do another year. And of course, she is so amazing. She's like, absolutely. So this event would not be possible without Casey and her husband Forrest, who own Fred Astaire Dance Studio of Plymouth. They have been working with these seven stars for weeks. They've taken about 15 dance lessons, so that's an incredible amount of time dedicated not only the stars, our dancers, but also their instructors, who are putting in a lot of time, in which Casey is donating thousands and thousands of dollars to ensure that they are well trained and ready for their routine. And you know, Kathy, firsthand what that is like, being one of our contestants last year. It's a lot of dedication and a lot of time.
It is a lot of dedication, but it is so fun. I have to say, it was one of the most exciting things I did last year.
But do you get
nervous? I love that.
But do you get nervous? Did you get nervous, Kathy, in front of like a crowd that you were basically trying to do your best, and you know, you get those lessons and you're trying to put them, you know, hopefully to get that trophy.
Well, you do practice. You know, you practice at home and pretend you have your partner with you.
Do you have an audience, though? Do you have family come over and watch, or not so much?
I had my children, who are the biggest critics, you know, alive. So by the time I got there, and you were there for quite a while, because we had our glam squads. We have to give a shout out to them, too. They were amazing. And then when it was time, you just throw caution. You just go, right? You just have to do it.
Right. You have no other choice. That's always what I say. Like, maybe I don't want to do this, but I have no other choice. I signed up for it, right?
So, Amy, I have to ask, is it a whole, the seven folks who are performing, this is the first time they're doing it? You don't have a returning champion, right?
No, but we're thinking we're going to absolutely have to do five of these, so then we'll have an all-stars.
I like that. That's
right. So all of these all of our stars that are going to be performing have no prior dance experience whatsoever. So they have just been practicing and working with Fred Astaire and their instructors, and they're having a great time. They're all really enjoying the experience, trying something new. I think being pushed out of their comfort zone a little bit. It's not often we get to do that, and we're really proud of them. As I said, it's a fundraiser for the Plymouth One Fund, and I will say this group has raised an incredible amount of money so far. We've asked that they at least fundraise a certain amount of money. All of them have far exceeded that. We've raised almost $40,000 just
incredible.
Before the event has even started. That is just on their fundraising efforts. So that's just absolutely incredible. We have no doubt it's going to be a huge success Friday. After the dancers perform, they will be going around collecting money from the audience as well to hopefully bulk up their donations. And someone will also be receiving some trophies, not just the Mirrorball trophy will be awarded, but also a fan favorite and our top fundraiser. So we'll be excited to present those as well.
How does it feel to know that this event is sold out, and if anybody wants to see this, they're going to have to check out the live stream being provided by PAC TV?
That is correct. It is an amazing feeling. We knew it would be a sold-out show. Once people started talking about it, heard about some of who our dancers were going to be, they were calling, trying to get tickets. We sold out, for our VIP tables in a week, maybe. Wow. It was incredible. So it's an incredible feeling that everybody is there to support the Plymouth One Fund, support our local businesses, and also come together as a community. I think it represents just how outstanding and amazing our community is. So it's not even just about the show. I think the camaraderie among the dancers has been incredible, and then coming together as a community for our businesses and supporting local. I mean, it's an awesome event. So it's a feel good for sure.
And so the folks who do live in the Plymouth area, which would be your Kingston, your Duxbury, your Pembrokes, Comcast Channel 13, Verizon Channel 43, streaming online, PAC TV.org/ live. No, I believe there's a component. No, the show starts begins at 7:45 p.m., but folks still can support their favorite dancer online, right?
That is correct. People can head over to PlymouthChamber.com and make a donation. They can also check out our social media pages. We have some great video coverage of the dancers, some photos on there as well. We'll be sharing QR codes throughout the evening as well, where it will bring them a direct link to their fundraising platform and they can support them. They can call the chamber and make a credit card payment over the phone. We're willing to do so any way possible. We also have Venmo, so people can Venmo as well that evening or prior to. So anybody who wants to support a dancer, I know that they would be very, very appreciative of the support. We also have four amazing judges. I want to highlight Kathy, of course, being one of them.
Of course.
And she has obviously amazing experience. She was a natural person to select to be one of our judges, as well as Michelle Braddy, our Director of Elder Affairs for the Plymouth Center for Active Living. Michelle's a good friend of mine, as well as Kathy, so I think she's going to bring some great energy, as well as a little criticism and fun to the banter of judging. And then Plymouth Town Manager Derek Brindisi will also be a judge, which is going to be great. This is the first time he's attended this event, so we're excited to have him. And then, of course, our special guest judge is Tony Dovolani. He is a Fred Astaire dance director and is, of course, from the ABC hit show Dancing with the Stars. He's a former dancer with, of course, that program.
Wow. So wait, now, who is, do you have a MC?
Yes, we have two of the best MCs. Our hosts are Casey Baird from Fred Astaire Dance Studio Plymouth and Rob Hackler of WATD.
Rob, they did such a great job last year.
Oh,
such a great job.
Outstanding, right? They did. It was obviously, I wouldn't let them say no. I asked them again immediately, like probably right after the show last year, like, you're in for next year, right? They
lock them up early.
Yes, exactly. Once you find a goodie, you got to keep them, right?
Indeed. So what was the total last year that this event was able to raise for the Plymouth One Fund? And do you do the Jerry Lewis, you know, the muscular dystrophy, $1 more? Are you setting the bar at a certain point that you hope you're able to raise that money to help businesses in need?
Yes, we've set a very high bar of $100,000 this year.
Wow.
Yes. So we are so hopeful we're going to far exceed that goal. Last year, I believe we raised, and you would think I would know it off the top of my head, but over $60,000.
Wow!
Outstanding, yeah.
So you guys are aiming you aiming for the moon for this one,
aiming for the stars.
Right.
But I think that's fantastic. You set the bar and you go for the gold.
You go for the gold.
That's right.
Well, that's right. Amy, I want to thank you for speaking with Amy from the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce. She's talking with us about the Dancing with Our Stars event taking place this Friday, going to be at the Indian Pond Country Club. So if you did not get tickets, they've sold out. But you can actually, again, watch this if you are in the Plymouth area, Kingston, Duxbury, Plymouth, of course, Pembroke. It's on Comcast, Verizon, and you can watch it online, streaming online. PAC TV does an amazing job when it comes to video production. They got a crack team down there. Down in the industrial park.
No, this is an Indian park.
No, what I'm saying is that's where they're located.
Yes, that
in the industrial park. But again, they're going to be at the Indian Pond Country Club in Kingston, broadcasting this, live streaming it on PACTV.org. Anything we haven't mentioned, Amy, but you think it's really important to share with our listeners?
I don't think so. Not in regards to the event, of course. There is something. So originally, the Plymouth One Fund was started to help Plymouth small businesses. And as a regional chamber, we represent 9 communities on the Lower South Shore. It was started because we were approached by a group, MasterMed, and we hosted our first fundraiser, Coachella, on PAC TV Live in the height of the pandemic, which was a musical concert on TV. We had over 60,000 people tuning into that.
It was amazing.
It was an incredible fundraiser. But of course, as a regional chamber, it's important for us to support all small businesses. So this year we are going to be announcing at the event that we are going to be expanding to the 9 communities. So any businesses outside of Plymouth who have a hardship, who need a little bit of financial assistance, we're here for them. We're going to open up the applications for anyone within the 9 towns we serve. So that's exciting. And I think it's a great opportunity. Again, something we learned from the pandemic is that we didn't have something in place for businesses, before there was any federal aid or anything at all, these businesses had nothing to turn to. We don't want that to happen again. People have fires, deaths, you name it. Hardships happen all the time. We want to ensure that we are there for small businesses, and this fund is so important in doing so.
And the chamber is always there. Always there for small businesses. Amy, what can I say? Thank you for joining us tonight.
Yes, thank you.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing you Friday.
I can't wait. And thank you guys so much for including me in tonight so I can chat about this. Obviously, something I'm super excited about and very passionate about. And so appreciate both of you.
And we look forward to having you back on soon.
Absolutely. Would love that.
We'll do a recap.
Yeah, you got it. There she is. Amy Naples, our guest, has been our guest for this particular segment, giving us an update on this fantastic event. And, of course, we saved a skosh of the program for the representative. Give you a chance to kind of talk a little bit about what's going on with you. And even if we just want to do a little bit of a show recap and get kind of talk about some of the things that we discussed this evening for our audience.
Oh, that's great. Well, I did mention for our last guest that I was at the St. Patrick's Day breakfast yesterday in South Boston. The first time that I've attended that event, and it was quite an event. It was quite an event. So wanted to share that. It was streamed, and I'm sure it was on the news a couple of times. But what I did find out at that breakfast is Elizabeth Warren is very funny.
Is she?
She really, really is.
She's a card.
And I would have to say our attorney general as well is very, very funny.
Andrea Campbell.
Yes.
No kidding.
Yes.
I think that while we have a microphone in front of your face, you should talk a little bit about, you actually went on a little bit of a trip.
On a little bit of a trip.
You had a chance to meet up with our ambassador to Ireland.
Oh, that trip.
Claire Cronin.
I did.
What was that like?
So I was in D.C. It was a very quick trip, but I was invited to D.C. by my former colleague and now the U.S. ambassador to Ireland to the Irish American Fund Gala. And that was quite an adventure. It was just an overnight trip with two of my colleagues. The gala was amazing. The Irish tenors were there. Chuck Schumer, McCarthy, you name it. And that was exciting. And then not to top that, the next morning, I was at Georgetown University to hear a panel of women about the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, which is the agreement between Northern Ireland and Ireland. And sitting directly in front of me was Madam Secretary Clinton.
What was that like?
It was very exciting for me. I knew she was going to be there. I just didn't know she was going to sit directly in front of me and I would be able to shake her hand and introduce myself. So it was kind of a moment out of body experience, but she was lovely and it was a history lesson.
Did you get a selfie?
I did not get a selfie, but my colleague did take a photo.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I do have a photo.
If you don't have a photo, it didn't happen.
Yes, but I did not do a selfie.
That's how the social media works.
That's how it works. And I have not posted yet.
But did you at all get, because, you're kind of a big deal.
I'm not a big deal.
You're a big deal, right?
My family doesn't think I'm a big deal. So, no, I'm not a big deal.
You're a big deal. You co-host a Monday Night Talk. You're a big deal.
Yeah.
But did you at all get inhibited? I mean, when you come across, I think about it sometimes. Like, if I ever came across you know, somebody who I've either, I don't, idolize is the wrong word, but somebody who I've, admire, I've followed,
right?
You know, I've the body of work or whatever mm-hmm. they do. How would I be able to stay composed, or would I just turn into melted ice cream? You know, because like, oh, I've never, you know. Do you feel like you composed yourself well enough?
I felt that I was very composed. Inside, I had butterflies.
You were jumping up and down inside.
I was jumping up and down. But one of the great things about me, we did go to an event too, if I don't have my glasses on, I really can't
see. I'm saying, why?
So if I'm introduced to someone.
So you're nearsighted?
I'm both now that I get older. When I'm older, it's just a mess. So I can be introduced to someone and not really know who they are.
Yeah.
And just...
You're like me. You put your eyes... Oh, my God.
And then afterwards, I'm like, that was who?
Yep.
But, yeah, it's like I'm living my best life. It's exciting. It's exciting.
But this event was at the... Was it at the White House?
No.
No,
it was
at a function.
A museum.
Oh, okay.
It was at a museum. Thousands of people were there.
Wow.
But it was one of those galas where there's six glasses, five forks. One of those. Yes.
Oh, almost like Pretty Woman. So
it
this
like
one,
Pretty
this
Woman.
One,
yes.
Count the number of times.
Yes. It was very exciting. It was very exciting for me. And it was the day of the storm, so we didn't know if we would get out, but we did.
Now, how long were you in D.C.?
We were in D.C.
Mm-hmm. How long were you there for?
Just overnight.
Oh,
just a quick trip.
I love D.C.
Too busy.
Love D.C. Love D.C.
Beautiful. And the, you know, the flowers were out, the daffodils.
I blame my missus, because we went a couple of times. We went during the cherry blossoms.
And they were out early.
Mm-hmm. I got a T-shirt.
Beautiful.
About cherry blossoms.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Is it really a thing?
Yeah, it's a thing. And they're fleeting. It's like you get it for like a week and then they're gone.
That's crazy.
So the cherry blossoms, you were down there and they were, oh.
Mm-hmm. I'm embarrassed to say that was my first time in D.C.
You're kidding.
No, I never went on the children's field trips. It was always my husband that went. But I will be back. Georgetown. Having my daughter apply there, that's for sure.
I walked through Georgetown. I blame my first trip, I blame on former WATD alum Steve Burns.
Oh?
Who was, he was an anchor down at WMAL. Went down and hung out with him and his significant other. And it was, he took me around the city. It was amazing. And then myself and Sandy, we went, she's like, let's go down to D.C. I'm like, let's do it. We went down and it was just amazing. We went to, she should be somebody who does like a travel agent. She's just so good at picking that stuff.
I love when you have someone with you that makes the plans and knows everything and researches and you get there and they have the plan and where you're going to be at what time.
Oh,
and
my God.
I love that.
First time, the first we it was kind of like, we're just coming out of COVID. We had to wear masks.
Mm-hmm.
So we did like a Segway tour.
Oh, fun. I saw people doing that.
Yeah,
fun.
It was amazing. It was difficult because you had to kind of lean a certain mm-hmm. way. It was pretty cool. D.C. is, if you, I tell folks, if you haven't
not
a chance
been,
to go,
it's a place to go.
It's the place to go.
And everything's free.
And you walk around and the scooters everywhere.
There are scooters. Not as many of that as there are in Nashville. When I went to Nashville, there was 1,000 scooters.
You're kidding.
I kid you not.
Wow.
Thousands of scooters. Not as many here. Because they're pretty dangerous.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you don't know what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
you have to make sure it's not in sport mode. What else is going on as far as, I know we teased it at the beginning of the show that, you know, Ways and Means and traveling. You're traveling tomorrow.
We are. I'm traveling tomorrow with my colleagues, Matt Muratori and Allison Sullivan. All three of us sit on Joint Committee of Ways and Means. And so what we do for the budget season is we travel across the Commonwealth and we have 5 hearings. So tomorrow will be Health and Human Services.
Nice.
And I'll be chairing that hearing with Senator Cronin from Fitchburg. And it will be at Fitchburg at the municipal building. So I'm looking forward to it. It's a long drive. And we were in Amherst last week and we have Gloucester coming up and we have Holyoke coming up and Springfield. So...
What's it like to sit on the Ways and Means? And I mean, if you're chairing, you're going to be chairing one of these.
I'll be chairing tomorrow.
How do you address the crowd? And what is the conversation? Strictly health related when it comes geared towards the budget, right?
It's the budget. What's in the budget? So the governor's already come up with her budget and what they need for their budget. And so we discuss that and what their needs are, the obstacles that they're facing and what's going right. And we start off with the new Secretary of Veterans, which is my former colleague, John Santiago. So he'll be starting it off, and it'll be interesting. I want to see how he's doing, you know, beginning what he sees for the future, because that's a tough gig. He's got a tough gig.
Well, good luck on your on your hearing.
Thank you.
We have another big show next week. I'm not sure if you'll be able to be here, but we're already, it's already in the planning stages. As folks may or may not know, she's co-host seat whenever she wants. She wants to pop in. She is the co-host.
And I love it.
And so more Monday Night Talks. And again, I am a couple of shows behind on the podcast, but we are working to get them up. You could hear, you can hear more Monday Night Talk segments featuring State Representative Kathy Lenatra and Kevin Tocci. That's me. And we thank you for tuning in to this show as we strive to give you the best conversation, not only on this radio station, but on the radio dial if possible. So we're doing, trying to do, strive to give
keeping
you the best
local news out to the listeners.
And giving it to you, giving you the straight poop.
Yes, yes.
So until next week at 6:15 p.m., you make sure you have yourselves a great night.